answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
We had a productive meeting, I think, House and Senate leaders. The president was very forthright. I told the president what I have been saying for many months, and that is that we must have change at the border, substantive policy change. We understand that there's concern about the safety, security, sovereignty of Ukraine, but the American people have those same concerns about our own domestic sovereignty and our safety and our security. But we must insist that the border be the top priority. I think we have some consensus around that table. Everyone understands the urgency of that, and we're going to continue to press for it.
Well, I'm not so sure he's right. That is Speaker Mike Johnson. After they came out of a bipartisan meeting, Republicans and Democrats meeting with President Biden, and if you listen to Johnson, he said, I think we got a good session. Everybody understands you want to do Ukraine. We understand that. But first, you have to take care of the Americans and the American border. That is his take. In a minute, you're going to hear something that doesn't exactly sound like they were in the same meeting. That'd be from Chuckie Schumer. No surprise, but we're going to lay it out for you. Thank you again for joining us. This is the second of 2 hours of Larry Connors USA, back to back. And reminding you, when we're on the air streaming, when we're on the air for you, we are streaming video at Larry Connors USA, Facebook, Twitter, Rumble, News Talk STL, Facebook, Twitter, Rumble. And if you miss anything, you simply go back to LarryConnorsUSA.com. And you can find it. And when you do, also push the share button. Send it on to others. If everyone listening to me did that to five others, shared it with five others, friends, family, enemies, I love it when you send us to your enemies, then maybe we'll see us crossing 1,000 every day on those watching through the Rumble. But we're glad to have you just listening on the air. In fact, I'm very glad and happy to be here. Been with News Talk STL now for just a little over a year. And every day I thank God first, and then Jeff Allen and Joe Rush for giving us a chance. And then, of course, you for making the success this program has. And for our sponsors who keep us on the air. So once again, we have sponsors that can meet any need you might have. And when you need something they have, please use them. Even if you don't need them, just call them. Say, hey, thanks for supporting a truly 100% patriotic program that's not going to feed us BS. I'll give you opinions, but I'm going to give you facts, too. And I'll also tell you every time, do not take me at my word without questioning it. Don't ever do that, not with me or anyone. Question everything. I'm not looking to have a bunch of lemmings follow me around. I'm looking for thinking Americans like those of you listening right now. I know you have your own thoughts. I know we don't always agree. That's fine. That's part of America. We don't have to come to fisticuffs over it. We have some differences. And then we can sit down, have drinks, and share, and talk about other things that we enjoy doing. Like maybe playing poker and you giving me a lot of your money. I'd like that. You want to try that? All right, once again, let's get back to this Mike Johnson. After this bipartisan meeting with his Democrat counterparts from the Senate, gathering also with the president, last night on the Ingram angle, Speaker Johnson, Republican, Louisiana, rejected the claim that he was strong-armed during a meeting with President Biden at the White House on a border deal. According to the Louisiana Republican, he said, I told Biden he had the authority to quell the crisis at the U.S. border, Mexico border. Ingram said, to her credit, so then you show up at the White House and they're like trying to strong-arm you to agree to something that's been written by Schumer's staff for months? And Johnson's answer, yes, Laura, no one is strong-arming me. I told the president, I looked right across the table from him in the cabinet officials' room, and I said, Mr. President, you have the authority right now to end this catastrophe. It's your actions that created it. In fact, Mr. President, and I told him in the meeting today, we have documented 64 instances of you taking executive actions in your agencies that created this catastrophe. It's on you to unwind it. We don't need new laws. You can do it right now. He said, I cited him, read him the legal authority on the phone Thursday last week. Ain't nobody said the meeting, Laura. We're ready to do big things on the border. So Johnson left the meeting thinking, well, I think we're reaching some ground here. Well, shortly after Johnson came out of the White House and made his statement, here comes Chucky Schumer with his view.
It was a very good meeting and a very positive meeting. There was a large amount of agreement around the table that we must do Ukraine and we must do border. There was tremendous focus on Ukraine and an understanding that if we don't come to Ukraine's aid, that the consequences for America around the globe would be nothing short of devastating. I am more optimistic than ever before that we'd come to an agreement. I put the chances a little bit greater than half now. And that's the first time I can say that.
Now, when he says that better than half, that does that mean we're going to get what we need for Ukraine? The border be down? I think that's what he's saying. Look, I do agree in supporting Ukraine to an extent, but we've done a lot already. I know they could use more, but I also know we've got to do our border first and foremost, and if there's a large bundle of money, it does not go to Ukraine. It goes to our border, and not to process and rush people through, but to shut it down. Maria Bartiromo had a chance to talk to the Heritage president, and again, talking about this border issue. Let's pick it up where she began her program.
Welcome back. The House Homeland Security Committee holding its second impeachment hearing into the Department of Homeland Security Committee Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas today for potential impeachment. They're focusing on the victims of illegal migrant crime. The chairman of the committee, Mark Green, sending a letter to Mayorkas ahead of the hearing demanding that Mayorkas submit written testimony, writing this, our request for written testimony from Secretary Mayorkas is his last chance to show some semblance of respect for the people's representatives and our constitutional oversight duties.
So she was bringing up the constitutional duties and the oversight committee as it is, and to get into investigating Mayorkas to the point where you're going to impeach him because he has failed in his duties, his sworn obligations to protect this country from all enemies, foreign and domestic. And as I said, she was bringing that up in the presence of her guest, which is the president of the Heritage Foundation.
The American people, as you know well, Maria, are ready for Mayorkas to be impeached and removed from office. This is what I expect from the administration, however. They've stonewalled this. They are responsible 100% for this crisis at the southern border. And ultimately, we have to hope that even with a thin majority, that the House Republicans are going to stick to their guns and actually impeach him, because that's what the American people are looking for.
But what does that mean when it gets to the Senate? Doesn't it die?
It does. But one thing that Republicans might want to keep in mind today on the issue of the border, on the issue of spending, is that they have the political will at their backs. And it's about time, speaking on behalf of millions of Americans, that Republicans spend some of that political capital. Chairman Green is exceedingly articulate on this issue. They need to sort of turn the tables on Chuck Schumer for once and put the pressure on him and his party, because they're the ones responsible for this.
He's talking about Tennessee Senator Mark Green, who sent a letter that Maria was referring to, that we need to move forward with the impeachment. And again, here you have the president of the Heritage Foundation. We have many other people on the air with us from time to time. But that's Kevin Roberts saying the American people want it, and the Republicans have the wind at their back. They're getting all kinds of push and support from the American people. They're not out of step with the American people, even in the poor areas. And it's been documented numerous times among the Democrats. Even their areas have said enough. And they know the sanctuary city idea was never a good idea. We told them, but they had to see it and have it thrown in their face. Now they're paying a price, and many of their constituents are. And many of these Democrat congressmen and senators have got to go back into those same blue cities and states and say, we're doing everything great. But you think anybody's going to believe that? Of course they're not. And to that extent, Kevin Robert, again, the president of Heritage, adds, the Republicans aren't necessarily doing everything right either.
Our friends, the conservatives in Congress, good men and women all, get skittish. At the very time that they need to be using this political will to advance the will of the American people, which is to close the border, to send H.R. 2 back to the Senate, they decide that they're going to get caught up in shutdown politics. We don't want a shutdown, but a shutdown is a lot less harmful to the American people than what continues to go on at the border every single minute. As we sit here, yeah, there are hundreds of illegal aliens crossing the border, as you know, Maria. It's time for Republicans in D.C. to actually grow a spine.
To grow a spine. In other words, you've got the will of the American people. You know what they want. Why would you be skittish? I'm personally for any Republican or Democrat that will say, I will vote solidly every time to shut the border. And then back it up with a vote. You going to win by being skittish? I hope to hell you don't. Every one of those GOP members, as he said, all good and people, you got to grow a spine. You're as weak as Hunter Biden was the other day when he was in the House and he got called out by Congresswoman Stefanik, saying you have no balls. And Marjorie Taylor Greene calling him a coward as he left the room. I'm going to put every one of you Republicans who have an R behind your name, who claim that you're really about this country, and you're not doing that job, you and Hunter must be brothers. You're certainly sipping out the same water fountain. In the meantime, how the leftists continue to weaponize our government to use against you Americans. Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan.
At the request of government, you got banks searching private transactions of their customers for key search terms, key words. It looks like without any warrants, without any legal process. And what were those keywords they were searching? Did they purchase religious texts? Did they shop at Cabela's or Bass Pro Shop? Were they purchasing a firearm? You go through this, Larry. That pretty much describes the vast majority of the people in the 4th District that I get the privilege of representing, for goodness sake. So this is financial surveillance at its worst.
He's talking about the Treasury Department now being used to go into your banks and word to them. We'd like to see all the bank statements for Larry Connors. See if he's purchased anything from Cabela's lately. A fishing pole? Oh, that could be a dangerous weapon. Because he might have also gotten some barbed lures. They could be used as dangerous items as well. Oh, did he buy a gun? Oh, yeah. Oh, and he went to a bookstore and bought a new Bible? We're going to have to keep our eye on that guy. This is not what America's supposed to be. This is not what you should be subjected to in this country. This is that close and closing to Hitler and communism and Marxism. We already know from prior examinations that this government will go overboard anyway. We know that. We know the January 6th thing, how many things they have screwed up and lied about and put people in jail, not give them a time yet to even have a hearing, and then sentence some that they consider the most vile, even when they don't really have the evidence. And I'm not a January 6th supporter of what they did that day, many of them. But there were many that did nothing other than be there and walk through the velvet ropes just looking at the Capitol, and they're being charged with trespassing. I I'm looking over all this stuff, and I keep thinking, if I had sat here 5 years ago and someone asked, what do you think about all this going on? I would say, it just doesn't happen. But Jim Jordan says, yes, Americans are being targeted.
Polling suggests that the vast majority of Republican voters agree with the statement that the government has been weaponized against them. That's why they went out and voted for President Trump, because they know he'll come here and fight that, change that, drain the swamp, as you just said. But that's on the voters' mind, and they believe that because it's true. We have seen it. Remember, they tried to set up the Disinformation Governance Board at the Department of Homeland Security. And just a few years before that, Democrats were saying, when it came to the border issue, that we should abolish the Department of Homeland Security. Then they get in office with Joe Biden and says, no, we don't want to abolish it now. We want to create this censorship board. That's how radical it's gotten, and the people get it. Again, that's why they voted for President Trump in such big numbers on Monday night, and it's why I think he's going to win the nomination. And as Vivek just said, I think he's going to be our next president.
And Vivek, he was referring to Vivek, because when Ramaswamy the other day stepped forward and said, I'm with Donald Trump, he gets my support going forward. Now, we also are still waiting to see what's going to happen with Hunter Biden. And the question raised for Jordan is, are we actually going to see Hunter Biden deposed, and not only behind closed doors, but then a full public hearing on everything he's been involved in?
He's coming. We've been talking with his counsel. Our chief counsel on the committee has had numerous conversations with Mr. Lowell. Hunter Biden's coming. We just got to figure out when that date's going to be. But we do believe he's coming now. We've already got scheduled tomorrow, Kevin Morris. Next week, we got Eric Schwerin, Rob Walker, all coming in. We want to talk with Jim Biden. And then, of course, we want to talk with Hunter Biden. And then but that's all going to happen. Three of those have already been scheduled.
So apparently it is going to happen. And, of course, one of the things they are going to be talking to Hunter about, or should, is the illegal purchase of a firearm. Lefties who are listening, you should be all about this. If you want to have gun control, then you need to enforce the laws you have. And Hunter Biden was on cocaine and drugs, addicted to them, using them regularly, when he lied on a federal form and said he wasn't. They just retrieved his holster from a locked safe to examine it in more detail. You know what they found on the holster that he carried his gun in? Well, before I rush to judgment here, maybe Hunter likes powdered donuts. You like those? I like the little mini powdered donuts, but you take a bite of them, I get white all over my shirt. Anything else I touch, it's maybe he was eating powdered donuts while he was putting his gun in his holster. But the examination found it was not powdered sugar. It was cocaine. Cocaine on the holster of the gun that he illegally purchased while he was claiming, I don't use drugs. That alone should put him behind bars. There are people behind bars for similar or less than that right now in lying such cases. But it's Hunter Biden. Coming up, we're taking a look at the Uvalde DOJ report is now out. Lock and load. Ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Question, do you know what vermiculite is? It is an insulation in the attics of hundreds of thousands of homes and public buildings. Looks like kitty litter, but often contains asbestos. Wellington Environmental is the largest company in the Midwest that can remove that hazard for you. Wellington has what is called the General, a powerful industrial vacuum that can suck vermiculite out of the attic. Hang on, there's something else you should know. Many of you might qualify for up to a $4,000 rebate. You should at least contact Wellington to see if you qualify. And here's something else. Wellington arrives at the time they give you, not sometime within 4 hours. 314-644-4930. 844-649-4930. WellingtonSTL.com. WellingtonSTL.com. Wellington Environmental. Your world. Cleaner. Better. Safer. Be well with Wellington.
Talk radio made in St. Louis.
Very excited for what you guys are doing for the St. Louis community.
For St. Louis.
Relevant local talk.
Saying what we are thinking.
This is News Talk STL.
No, you guys are awesome. I love you. And it really, it's a tremendous honor to be on the station.
News, analysis, and opinion.
Thanks for covering the local angle.
Oh, people, this is America.
We better open our eyes.
Really local? Really good.
News Talk STL at 101.9, 94.1
and NewsTalkSTL.com.
As a truck driver, I've learned how important road safety is. I know that large trucks need more time and room to stop. That's why I always hang back and follow other vehicles at a safe distance. Everyone can help keep our roads safe. Next time you're driving, try to remember to always give trucks extra space when you merge in front of them. Let's all plan to share the road safely. Learn how at www.sharetheroadsafely.gov.
Ackerman Toyota had a great 2023, so Jay asked me to thank you for all of your support. Loyal customers making Ackerman Toyota number one in St. Louis Toyota sales. Number one out of the 75 Toyota dealers in the region in Camry and Corolla sales. Ackerman has the lowest prices, great selection. Visit Ackerman at Hampton and 44 or online, AckermanToyota.com. Ackerman Toyota, for life.
This is News Talk STL.
And we're down we go.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
We are getting our first look at the Department of Justice's findings of its nearly year and a half long investigation into the horrific mass shooting in Uvalde, Texas back in 2022. According to the report, poor coordination, training, and execution of active shooter protocol contributed to a law enforcement response that it describes as a, quote, failure.
It goes on to say, quote, the most significant failure was that responding officers should have immediately recognized the incident as an active shooter situation, using the resources and equipment that were sufficient to push forward immediately and continuously toward the threat until entry was made into classrooms 111 and 112 and the threat was eliminated.
The threat was eliminated. And do you know who ended up killing the shooter at Robb Elementary? If you're really aware of the case, you know it was not a law enforcement officer who was on the scene called in to deal with an active shooter. I'll fill in that gap for you in case you have missed it in a moment. But again, we're talking about this nearly 600-page report. As the Wall Street Journal said, represents the fullest accounting to date in the response to the May 24, 2022 shooting, in which a gunman killed 19 fourth graders and two teachers, while nearly 400 law enforcement officers in the area failed to intervene. The victims were trapped with the gunman for more than an hour while law enforcement stayed outside. Why would that happen? Well, according to some, they believe that it killed all the victims in those classrooms, so no sense going in and making ourselves a target because the kids are all dead. How did they know? How did they know that he had already killed all the kids in those two classrooms and the teachers? The answer is they didn't know. They didn't know. They just weren't hearing anything from inside. So, and the shooting had stopped. So they thought, well, maybe he took his own life or he's killed everybody. He's waiting for us to come in, ambush us. Two things wrong with that thinking, and both wrong. One, he will ambush us, waiting for us to come in so he can ambush us. That might well happen, But you get your butt in there, because kids that you're not hearing from may be dying while you're waiting. I haven't seen any autopsy report. In fact, I went through this report from the DOJ making this investigation, and I'm looking at what they said about the medical examiner on what they found, reference to kids as to if they were killed immediately or not. And I had one piece that I had not been able to verify again, and before I give it to you, I'd like to get additional verification, but I can't make sure, but EMS staff were on the scene, obviously, once they could go in and start getting people out of there. But let me go through this litany of items that they put into this report. They say the errors committed by responders that day runs from the early on with no one checking whether the door connecting the two classrooms was locked. Even as that should have been the first immediate approach. Once it got into one of the rooms, try to get into the other. Was it locked or not? Through the scramble after the gunman was killed and into the night, parents were being told their children were dead, and yet many were not necessarily dead. The school police chief told investigators he's more concerned about saving students in other classrooms than trying to stop the gunman who had already shot children and teachers. Look, I'm not trying to single out and name anyone, which, by the way, you're not going to hear me state the shooter's name. I refuse to use his name. But if you're in a position of responsibility and authority, yeah, you've got some answers to be explained. The city's acting police chief knew there were children trapped with the gunman, but did not organize a rescue. So we have the school police chief saying, I'm concerned about saving students in other classrooms than trying to stop the gunman. The city's acting police chief knew there were children trapped with the gunman but didn't organize a rescue. The county sheriff initially stated a different crime scene, didn't share information he had about the shooter. A Texas Ranger told investigators his actions were minimal despite being part of the elite force required to help local agencies. A captain with the State Department of Public Safety, which would be the Highway Patrol, ordered a halt to entry into the classroom, thinking a better team was on the way, a more skilled team. A female state trooper who said she would have tried harder if her own son had been inside, Robb Elementary, has since joined the school police force, leaving the Highway Patrol. They talk about the chaos in the hallway after the gunman was killed. They talk about someone at some point apparently yelled out, if you need help, shout help. Apparently one child hollered, help, and was shot and killed by the gunman. It's not clear if the gunman was checking on the victim to see if some were not dead. If you need help, say help. Well, one of the kids, fourth grader, yells help. The gunman sees him or her and shoots them. If it were the officers outside asking, if you need help, say help, they basically set that child up to be slaughtered rather than getting inside and doing what they should. You overwhelm, you rush in, you flood. Would there be casualties with children? Yes, there could well be. Could it be possible that even some children might have been hit by police gunfire? That is certainly possible. You can't take those things out of consideration. But when you know kids are inside, you just don't know if they're alive or dead or in the process of dying. You do not wait outside. You breach the door and you go inside. Again, this 600-page report is a lot to consume, but they point this out. The Justice Department found this was a single most critical tactical failure. And that happened because officers on the scene should have recognized this was an active shooter scenario, moved, pushed forward immediately, continuously to the threat until the room was entered, the threat eliminated. That did not occur. It did not occur at that point. Instead, the intensity level dropped as responders began to treat the situation as a barricaded suspect operation that did not need immediate action. This is not a guy barricading himself in his house with no one except himself saying, I'm going to kill myself. You can wait that guy out. If he shoots himself, he does. If he's got a child in there threatening to kill his child, you're going to have to be more active, proactive. But according to the report, for the span of more than 1 hour, between 11:37 a.m. and 12:49 p.m., there were at least 10 stimulus events, including at least 6 separate instances of gunfire, totaling approximately 45 rounds in law enforcement officer presence, as well as officer injuries and the presence of victims. Any one of these events should have driven law enforcement response to take immediate steps. Some officers admit they were confused about why there was no attempt to confront the active shooter. But they didn't have any orders. They didn't have any structure. Leadership was lacking. And if they tried to make some decision, they were basically challenged by those who said they were in charge. The then skilled police chief and then acting Uvalde police chief and Uvalde County Sheriff also singled out for failing to take a lead. Both on the scene within minutes, neither took effective command. 19 fourth graders killed. 2 teachers. So who did put an end to the shooting? As I said, it was not one of the police officers who had been called there. He never got a chance to be involved in it. The gunman who killed, or the man who killed the gunman, was an off-duty Border Patrol agent. Off-duty. But he had a child and a spouse inside that school. There was originally a report a U.S. Border Patrol tactical team shot and killed him. That was not true. This off-duty agent for the Border Patrol heard about it, rushed to the scene with a borrowed shotgun. He said, I didn't go in to kill the gunman or go inside the classroom where the shooting took place, but he did end up shooting and killing the gunman. He said, in case anyone missed it, the man that killed the school officer was even on duty, a parent, a spouse of a fourth grade teacher. He just happened to be a Border Patrol agent. I've been to shootings like this, not only schools, but other such instances, but schools are the most clear example. You got parents gathered kettle block, 2 blocks away or more. They got kids in there. They want to break through the line. They want to get there, and you feel for them. If my child was in there, I'd want to do the same thing. They'd have to be holding me back. But it's also possible if they all rush in there, they're going to cause more chaos and lead to more deaths possibly. But if it is your child, your spouse, thank God this Border Patrol agent said, I'll just do it myself. They're not going to stop me. I'm going in. I don't know how some of these officers can live with the actions that took place that night, that day. And for those struggling, I pray for them. But God, we should have learned this. We should have learned this. We should keep it in mind going forward. Coming up, why Tucker Carlson hates Nikki Haley so much, and more when we continue.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at LarryConnorsUSA.
I'm always glad to have new sponsors, but I have turned some down. See, I only endorse clients if I believe in them. And I've been a spokesman for John Beal for 10 years. Through those years, listeners said they went with John Beal because they trusted me. And just recently, a woman named Mary wrote, we got a John Beal roof based on your recommendation. Thank you, Mary, and all the others for calling John Beal. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Sometimes you want to do something extra special for someone. Vincent's Jewelers can help you. Maybe you want to do something for yourself, mark a date, something you accomplished. It doesn't have to be anything really expensive, but it has to mean something now and for the future. Vincent's, locally owned, just asked for the chance to work with you, as they have with me, on Olive, just east of 270. Every day, new specials at vincentsjewelers.com or Vincent's Facebook.
The United States Deputy Sheriff's Association is a national nonprofit and the largest non-governmental provider of services to law enforcement. The USDSA assists city, county, state, and federal agencies with free safety equipment donations and officer survival training, along with cash donations to families of law enforcement officers who perish in the line of duty, a citizen awareness program, and more. For more information on United States Deputy Sheriff's Association, please visit usdeputy.org.
One of the five most traumatic experiences in life is moving. I can assure you that McGuire Moving can help ease that pressure. Moving into a new home or a new business, locally, internationally, McGuire is rated number one. More than 80 years of experience. Free estimate, call McGuire, 314-241-0600. 241-0600. McGuireMoving.com.
This is News Talk STL.
Hit the road, Jack. Don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
What you say?
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
There are a couple of other things I want to add regarding this shooting in Uvalde. As I said, the Department of Public Safety involved in giving some of the details, the Uvalde Police Department, everyone contributing what they could during a DOJ investigation of what went wrong, what went right, very little, in that shooting that took place at Robb Elementary School. When a gunman, 18 years of age, killed 19 children and two teachers. That was May 24, 2022. I'd mentioned to you that one person who did get inside was an off-duty agent, but Border Patrol agent. I want to clarify a couple of things, or expand on them, I should say. There were quickly social media posts that were misidentifying who stopped the shooter that day. One widely shared Facebook post read, "It was a parent and a spouse of a fourth grade teacher. He just happened to be a Border Patrol agent." And apparently that went on to describe the actual fact of what happened. This off-duty Border Patrol agent was getting a haircut when he heard about the shooting, borrowed his barber's shotgun, rushed to the scene, broke into an area where he knew his daughter was in class and maybe his wife would be there as well, got them out and went back in and shot the suspect. Now, keep in mind the other thing that existed, and I was looking back over the report during the break because I don't see it addressed here. They were talking about how did he even get inside. If you recall, there's video where he drives his pickup up and crashes into what we call in Texas just a ditch, and kind of stuck there, but then he went in and went around the back and went in through doors that supposedly to be locked, but they weren't. Apparently, some teachers, is not identified who, would from time to time go outside, have a smoke in the back of the school, and then rather than having to call somebody or pound on the door to get somebody to come open it for them, they just began propping it open. and the gunman's going in trying to find different ways to get in, but couldn't until he got to the back side and found the doors that were supposed to be locked were not locked. They were propped open. I'm looking again at this critical incident report, and there's so many factors. Any one of them could have changed something. The school police chief who was on got there, he said, my concern was about saving students in other classrooms. Well, on one hand, you can understand that if it's just him. If he had a weapon, though, he should have been going after the gunman. It's not clear to me if he did or not. He is the school police chief. I don't know if he was carrying or not. The acting police chief for the city shows up knowing there were children trapped with a gunman, but he did not organize a rescue. And he definitely had a weapon. He did not try to go in and do it. The county sheriff, who initially stayed at a different crime scene, had some information about the shooter that might have been helpful. He didn't share that at the time. And again, there were too many, according to the number of people that were trying to look into the classrooms while the gunman's weapon was not properly retrieved, bullets weren't properly retrieved. Then there was a heavy rain that compromised the evidence they might have outside. But a former state trooper had said, I would have tried harder if it had been one of my children inside that school. She is now on the school police force. Left the Department of Patrol, Highway Patrol. And a captain with the State Department of Public Safety ordered a halt of those who were going to try to rush into the classroom, saying, wait, we got a more skilled team coming, a special SWAT team. You don't do that. You don't do that when you know kids have already been shot. They may still be alive. One family member said that they'd been told their child was at the hospital, went from one staff member to another describing their child, only to be told, no, they're not here, and later found out their child was deceased, had been at the hospital for hours, unidentified. The report also notes the district superintendent told a school board member he intended to honor our families at this time with support, love, commitment to move forward. However, around the same time, the district hired as a school police officer a former Texas Department of Public Safety trooper who had been at Robb Elementary that very day. One 11-year-old who survived says he and his friends will never be the same. I have no doubt the trauma they're going through. Same thing with the children in Gaza who are innocent victims of all this fighting that's going on. They're caught in the middle of it. And, of course, for them, it will be used to fuel and feed on hate for Jews and Israel. All right, let me turn attention to a couple other things here. First of all, the Justice Department did this the other day. I just didn't have time to spend on it. Partly because, no kidding. The DOJ confirmed in a court filing that Hunter Biden's laptop is real. No kidding, like I said. And according to the polling that took place, they said 70, not the DOJ, obviously, but those who took the poll, trying to get a source on the poll here. I don't see anyone cited, but they say that 71% of Americans they did survey believe that accurate reporting of Hunter's laptop from hell could have altered the 2020 presidential polling. the election. It took nearly 2 years before the New York Times reported the emails from Hunter's laptop were his. And if you keep in mind, CNN actually also had to admit finally it was authentic. The story broke October 24, 2020, but it was being called Russian disinformation, made up. They walked away from it. Numerous other media operatives were told by the FBI, don't bother, it's all fake, Russian collusion. You don't want anything to do with it. And even Biden and his press secretary gave inaccurate statements. Biden, overwhelming evidence from the intel community says it was Russian disinformation. Lie. Joe Biden, Hunter's laptop, just a smear campaign, a bunch of garbage. Lie. Spokeswoman at the time, Jen Psaki, that laptop was part of a broad range of Russian disinformation. Lie. They want to know why they're not being trusted now. And there's new evidence of a storm brewing inside the Democrat Party. This, I believe, is from Politico. I've got so many articles here, I may be off. It could be a Breitbart. I don't try to hide anything from you. A source from Barack Obama's inner circle just leaked that the former president is worried Biden could very well lose. David Axelrod, a key political strategist for Obama, had warned previously Biden and his campaign need to ramp up ASAP or just drop out of the race altogether. And Axelrod was being quoted as saying, I understand Biden was irritated because I raised concerns that many, many Democrats had. And again, my feeling is either get out or get going. No official response from Obama nor Axelrod. A Wall Street insider, frequent guest at Mar-a-Lago, went public with a new election prediction that points to Biden getting removed from the ballot as soon as August 19. And in his place, a controversial, quote, shadow figure or candidate will emerge who stands to usher in a new wave of liberal policies, regulations alike not seen since FDR. I know a lot of this looks like it's somebody sitting around dreaming stuff up. I cannot find, oh, I see it's got a guy that identified as Luis Navier and talk about his 2024 election prediction. Probably got something to sell for a time as well. You can believe it or not, I'm just trying to give you the information the best I can. But we do know Axelrod has made it clear, the Biden organization, you guys are not doing what you need to be doing to win. And obviously, if you're not in it to win, get out and give the party a chance to put someone in that can. And even we were using parts of him the other day, former Bill Clinton advisor, presidential advisor, James Carville, Nolens. Well, man, he's going to get out. He's going to have to get out there and do more. He's not going to win. I don't think he can. And I know the other Democrats are upset at me, but he can't. I do love James Carville's accent and all about him, but his ideas are wackos sometimes. Now, someone you really, maybe many of you trust fully, would be Tucker Carlson, judging by the numbers he's had when he was on the network, then when he started his own channel. But Tucker Carlson hates Nikki Haley. Why? Well, let's begin with an answer to that statement.
A Nikki Haley presidency is a lot like a war with Iran. It's a terrible idea. No normal person wants it. But because a small, well-funded group of extremely enthusiastic activists are determined to have it anyway, we are perpetually on the verge of getting it. The next skirmish in this ongoing battle is going to take place a week from today in New Hampshire. And hard as it is to believe, Nikki Haley could do pretty well there. She could even win the New Hampshire primary.
Now, again, that was Tucker Carlson on his own program Tuesday of this week, the night of the Iowa caucus, and talking about what could happen in New Hampshire. Which also I want to remind you that Trump was complaining about how the Democrats were trying to rig the election again. And he's not wrong. Even a CBS reporter had to admit the situation was so bad in Iowa that in one precinct, they ran out of forms. What kind of forms? Folks were coming in saying, I want to file to switch my party affiliation. Well, they had to have a form for them to fill out to show they switched so they could vote in the Republican primary. They were coming in to vote for Nikki, not because they want her to be president, but they thought we can beat her easier than Trump. They're really Democrats posing as Nikki Haley supporters. That's not uncommon and not untold in reference to political elections, be they local or general. People trying to go in and get into the other party's primary and mess the ballot up or basically stack it the way they want it. But they were getting so many people coming in, they ran out of forms, so people had to go out to various homes, get printer paper, and get the printers fired up again. Meantime, back to Tucker Carlson, as to his distaste for Nikki Haley, has to do a lot with the money that's being dropped into her lap.
Now, much of Haley's money comes not from Republicans or conservatives, but from committed Democratic partisans. Anti-civilization activist Reid Hoffman, for example, is a major Haley supporter. Reid Hoffman is the founder of LinkedIn. He's a friend of Jeffrey Epstein's. He was a visitor to Pedo Island, in fact. He's also the guy who funded E. Jean Carroll's sexual assault case against Donald Trump. Reid Hoffman is a Democratic mega donor. In 2020, he gave $1 million to David Brock's American Bridge PAC. That's a group designed to physically harass Republican candidates. Hoffman's money has also helped to prop up the authoritarian governor of California, Gavin Newsom, as well as many others on approximately the same team. So you know exactly who he is. What's interesting is this cycle, Reid Hoffman is all in on Nikki Haley. His cash is paid for one of the most shameless propaganda operations in memory. So the very same people who told you 4 years ago that Joe Biden was a jovial, moderate grandfather just trying to return America to normal, those same people are now trying to sell Nikki Haley as a conservative woman of principle.
What do you think? Well, let me give you more background what Tucker was referring to. Billionaire tech entrepreneur Reid Hoffman did give a $250,000 donation to a super PAC supporting Nikki Haley. A political advisor with Hoffman confirmed that contribution to the fund with the Hill publication. New York Times had previously reported the donation. And this is coming from Hoffman, who is an open supporter of President Biden, who is running for re-election. He's giving money to Nikki Haley, even though he's a Biden guy. How big of a Biden guy is he? Well, he co-hosted a campaign fundraiser for Biden in San Francisco back in June. The writing is right in front of you. He's a Biden guy, but trying to dump money onto Haley, make her campaign bigger and stronger. The Times reported that Hoffman's political team even asked the pro-Haley super PAC, will you take money from a pro-Biden donor? And they said, Oh, yeah, we'll give it. Give it. And they did. Hoffman also had backed Hillary Clinton in her bid against Trump in 2016. Haley has been building up momentum. DeSantis has walked away from New Hampshire, going on down to South Carolina. So he's not really going to do well in New Hampshire either. And some will say, well, that's two strikes, you're out. He'll probably say, no, I get one more swing at the bat. Not going to make any difference. The Hill did reach out to the Haley campaign and that super PAC for some response to the money being dumped in by a Biden supporter. Their answer, no comment. As always, thanks for listening. Remember our pledge, one nation under God.
You can follow Larry on Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook. This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.